Emmanuel, who's in your corner? That's the message today as we grapple with the gospel. Who do you want in your corner if you're in a fight for your life? We are in the fight of our lives. Some are fighting for their health. Some are fighting for their finances. Some of you are fighting in your relationships. But all of us are fighting for our souls. We know the devil is really fighting for your soul. And if you were in the fight of your life, who would you want in your corner? If you had a tag team, who would you want in your corner? I was thinking about this, and I was thinking maybe I'd like to have Mike Tyson in my corner if I was in a fight. You wouldn't want Mike Tyson in your corner. He talks too much. He'll chew your ear right off. Ouch. Ow. Maybe you'd want George Foreman instead. I mean, after all, he has the Foreman grill. Maybe if you had somebody in your corner, you'd like Muhammad Ali. Back in the day, Muhammad Ali, he was a guy to have in your corner. I mean, he was the best there was. In fact, I mean, Muhammad Ali, when I was a kid, I mean, he was the fighter. And he could fight. I mean, he could knock anybody out. In fact, I mean, he was so good, he used to call himself Superman. There's a guy to have in your corner, Muhammad Ali. In fact, one time he got on an airplane and he said, he got on there and he didn't put his seatbelt on. And the stewardess comes back and she said, "Sir, you're going to have to put your seatbelt on." He says, "Don't you know who I am? I'm Muhammad Ali. I float like a butterfly. I sting like a bee. I'm the best there ever is. I'm Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali, I'm Superman. Superman don't need no seatbelt." And she said, "Yeah, and Superman doesn't need an airplane either. Put your seatbelt on, Muhammad Ali." Superman, who would you like to have in your corner? If you were in the fight of your life, who would you like to have? Today we're talking about, I know the name I would like to have in my corner, and that is Emmanuel. God is with me. He's in my corner. He's with me in the fight of my life. I don't know what you're going to go through. 2010 is just a week away. 2010. 2010. That's weird. 2010. It's going so fast. 2010. My grandfather was born in 1919. And he's going to be celebrating in a week. 2010. And the changes. I don't know what's going to happen in 2010. But I know who I want in my corner when I face 2010. I don't know what you're going to face in 2010. I don't know if you'll end up in a hospital room. I don't know if you'll end up financially in one of those mortgage situations with Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. We have one of those. That's fine. I don't know if your relationships are going to be the same. We don't know whose loved ones will be here, who won't be here. You don't know if you'll have a job. I don't know what's going to happen in 2010. You may be in the fight of your life. I don't know. I'm just glad God doesn't show me 2010. Aren't you glad God doesn't show you your future? I think if we saw our future, we'd be like Ahaz. We'd be shaking like trees in the wind if we saw the sicknesses, the illnesses, the financial things, the wars. We don't know what's going to happen with Iran or Iraq or Afghanistan. We don't know what's going to happen with North Korea. I mean, we don't know. I mean, Canada may just kind of turn on us, you know? All of our Canadian friends, you know? We don't know what's going to happen. It's 2010. But I know this. I know who I want in my corner. It's not Muhammad Ali. It's not Superman. I want God in my corner. And I thank God for His name, Emmanuel. God is with me. Ahaz faces this 730 years before Jesus is even born. He's talked about. Isn't that great? Because here it is, 2,000 years after He's been born, we get to talk about Him. God's with us. Ahaz is facing some tough things. You know, I don't know about you, but when Mary and Joseph were in that place where they were getting ready to name him, and an angel comes along and says, "I've got a suggestion." I am glad they listened to the angel. Do you imagine, like you remember when you guys had kids, those of you that have sons and daughters, you probably had family members making suggestions for names. I made a few suggestions with some of our kids. Aloquacious, it never went very far. Xavier, not a name that we stayed with. Parents that would go, "Well, you know, this would be a good name. I could you see Joseph?" His dad probably saying, "Hey, Joseph, Joe's a good name. How about John? John's a good name. Jacob." Mary's mom kind of whispering in her ear, "So you're having a son. You think it's going to be a boy, huh?" Because, I mean, it could have been a girl. I mean, the only way they knew it was a son was an angel. So if they're going to follow that course, but mom and dad, oh, yeah, of course an angel has some suggestions. But you should name him this. You know, some of the most popular names today is Joe. Still, Joseph is one of the most popular. John is still one of the most popular names. For women, it's Sarah and Mary. You know, you don't see names, which are good names. You don't see some of those other names because names mean something. You don't see names anymore like, oh, I don't know, Judas. Could you imagine, hi, this is my son. I'd like to introduce you, Judas. You know, immediately people go, oh, you're a Judas. That's kind of unfair for your kids. So those of you name your kids, or you don't see too many girls named Jezebel. That's my daughter, Jezebel. Yeah, we named her after a prostitute in the Bible. Yeah, it's biblical. You don't see names like that. Or, you know, after the 40s, the name Adolf kind of just dropped right off the planet. What should we name him? Oh, he's so cute. Let's name him Adolf. That doesn't fly. Don't see too many kids named Adolf. Probably don't see too many kids named Benedict. Not a name that flies too well. The angel comes along and says, I've got a name for you. His name is Emmanuel, God with us. What a great name. I want you to know, I'm so thankful this morning that God gave us the greatest name ever to His Son Jesus when He said He will be known as Emmanuel. God's with you today. I don't know, that gets me excited this morning. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, but I know who's in my corner. It's God. Ahaz, he didn't know what was going to happen in his life. And Ahaz probably didn't deserve a whole lot. But I want you to know, that name, Emmanuel, does a lot for me. It is full of things. It's full of authority. It's full of atonement. But it's full of an attitude. When you think about the name Emmanuel, doesn't that just kind of, Emmanuel, when you think about this, God's with me. You know, if you get into a corner this year and you walk out onto the mat and there's Mike Tyson about to take you on and you're in the fight of your life, I want you to know you might be standing there shaking in your boots. But I tell you what, God says, get an attitude. Get an attitude in your life. Come on, Christians, stand up and get an attitude. That's exactly what he says right there in verse 9 in your Bible. Isaiah tells Ahaz, who's standing there shaking like a tree blown in the wind. I mean, he's just shaking. And he says, get an attitude. Emmanuel ought to give you an attitude. God's in your corner. And he says in verse 9 right there in your Bible, it says, if you do not stand firm in your faith, you will not stand at all. Can I tell you, Christian, stand in your faith this morning. Stand firm in your faith this morning. Don't just stand there. Stand firm. I'll tell you, you're going to face down. Some of you are going to have some Mike Tysons in your life, okay? Some of you are going to have your ears chewed off. Some of you are going to have some Goliaths in your life this year. Some of you have already had some of those this year, haven't you? Some of you have already faced some things in your life that are very difficult. Can I tell you, you are in the fight of your life. You are in the fight of your life. I'm going to tell you, Satan, Beelzebub, the devil, the fallen angel Lucifer, whatever you want to call him, he's named in the Bible. He wants you so bad. He wants you in the fight of your life. And I'll tell you what, he is really good at his fight and he will engage you. But I want to tell you something. Someone else is fighting for you. Someone else is in your corner. Someone else wants you. Someone else wants you more. Someone else wants you more than just getting knocked out. Someone else wants you more than laying on the mat. His name is Jehovah and he wants you in his corner and he will fight for you. So I tell you, when Mike Tyson or Goliath or any of these giants stand up and they look at you, I tell you what, they ought to be shaking in their boots because they ought to look at you and they ought to see right in your corner, there is Emmanuel, God, with you. Whew. That ought to be worth the price of admission right there. That's good preaching. You ought to have Emmanuel. I don't know about you, but it does me good. Ahaz is standing there shaking in his boots. Now, I'm not saying you're not human. I'll tell you what. It doesn't say you're not going to be shaken, but it tells you to stand firm. You know, your Bible doesn't tell you necessarily the whole thing about courage. Sometimes people say, well, God, take this fear out of my life. I'm not sure the fear will be out of your life, but God will put the courage in the midst of that fear. I want you to know, if you know that God is standing in your corner, that ought to give you an attitude. I don't know what I'm going to face this year. And you have faced things. I love Job's word. The longer I live, the more troubles my eyes will see. He says that. As surely as sparks rise from the fire, so man is destined to see hard days. The longer you live, the harder it is. And I've seen those days. You've seen those days. You lose a loved one when you bury a mom or a dad, a sister or a brother, a child. You've seen some hard days. Some of you have come on hard days here in Michigan and with the economy and your job, and you felt horrible. This Christmas, you wanted to give so much, and you had so little. And you weighed that. What do I do? I want to give so much. And you felt guilty because you wanted to do more. And you have that weighing on you. Some of you in your relationships, you're having a hard time. Can I tell you something? Look in your corner. There is God, Emmanuel. That ought to do something to say, you know what, God, in the midst of all this, you're with me. I thank God that He's with me today. God is with me. I don't care if it's snowing outside, if it's raining outside. I don't care what the government says, health care, no health care, wars or no wars. You know what? It's all going to happen. The question is, who's in your corner when it happens? And I look and there's Emmanuel. That changes my attitude. You're in the fight of your life. Trust me, you are in the fight of your life. And those of you that aren't fighting, you're going to get engaged this year. Your adversary tells you, the Bible tells you that your adversary will engage you this year. He'll engage you to destroy your marriage. Young couples that are in love, he wants to destroy your marriage. Those of you with children, he'd love to destroy your children. Those of you that have the joy of the Lord, he would love no more than next year at this time at Christmas that you would turn and hate your God because he somehow hasn't supplied your needs. And you need to look into your corner and say, no, 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 my God is with me. And that gives me an attitude. My God will never leave me. My God will never forsake me. My God is with me. His name is Emmanuel. He is with us. That changes. I've been in fights. I think I've been in three fights in my whole life. That's not including my marriage, okay? That doesn't count. I've been in actually three fights in my life, I think. I think I have. I just never fought. I ran a lot. I learned to be a good runner. Okay? Nothing wrong with running away, all right? I remember when I was a little kid, there was a girl who lived down the street. There were three girls on the corner, the Mortensons. Morton Ann Mortenson. He was the biggest man I've ever met in my life. He was a very large gentleman. I saw him. He caught a fish one day and hung it from his tree. And it was a sailfish. He was bigger than the sailfish. He was a big man. And he just kind of threw a rope over and pulled that thing up. It was the largest fish I'd ever seen in my life. He was a big man. He had three girls. Kelly was the youngest. She was my age. And Kelly used to hit me all the time. And my parents always told me, never hit a girl. So I got my sister to do it. I was no dummy. Kelly used to hit me all the time. And I went to my mom one day, and I said, Mom, I'm tired of this. I'm going to beat her up. Now, I was pretty small. I was just an ankle biter. And she said, my mom said, honey, you don't hit a girl. She's hitting you because she likes you. It's the way girls flirt, okay? I thought, what lesson is this? This is what I can look for in my marriage? This is flirting? No, she said, this is the way girls flirt. She's hitting you because she likes you. One day she was hitting me with a rope. I thought, she must really like me. She had her jump rope out one day, and I was walking down the street, and she started hitting me with it. And I lost it. I was done. I said, that's it. I'm getting my sister, and my sister is going to beat you up. Because my sister was in my corner. And nobody beat me up without her beating them up, okay? My sister was 2 years older, and she took care of me, and she was a big girl, and she could fight. So I didn't have to. So I said, I'm going to get my sister, she's going to beat you up. And then it happened. Then the story goes on. Well, I'm going to get my sister. And Kelly's older sister, Stacy, was feared by every kid on our block. Because Stacy had what's called waffle stompers. A waffle stomper, some of you might remember having a pair of waffle stompers as kids. This is way back. They're a pair of boots that are so hard, and the bottom of them, when you step in the ground, they make a waffle print. And if you've ever been kicked by a waffle stomper, you learn to be afraid and run. And so all the boys on our block were afraid of Stacy and her waffle stompers. And so I said, I'm going to get my sister. She's going to beat you up. She said, I'll get my sister, and she'll get her waffle stompers. I thought, oh, boy, we just escalated this. This is war. I said, well, I'll get my mom. My mom will beat up your sister. And then she said, my mom will beat up your mom. And I'm going, oh, here we go. But then she just kind of bypassed that. She said, my dad will beat up your mom. And my response was, because my dad was a sergeant detective, homicide, narcotics, I said, my dad will shoot your dad. Game over. I win. You lose. My dad's got a gun and a badge. He can shoot anybody. When I was a kid, that's what I thought. He's got a gun and a badge and a cop motorcycle. He could do whatever he wanted to. We'd go to football games. He'd open up the badge. We'd go into football games. We'd go to the Oakland A's and the San Francisco Giants, and he'd just open up his badge. We'd go everywhere. And I thought, he can do anything. He was in my corner. And I want you to know, I've learned from that I know who my daddy is. And so it doesn't matter who I'm fighting. My daddy trumps anybody else's daddy. My daddy trumps any kind of demons. Anybody I'm fighting, I know who's in my corner. My corner has, it is Emmanuel, and it is God with me. That's who's in my corner. See, when you know who your daddy is, it ought to change your attitude. You walk around like you're somebody in the sense of, I've got someone right here in my corner. What do I have to be afraid of? Nothing. No wonder why the prophet Isaiah says to Ahaz, Ahaz, stand firm in your faith or you're not going to stand at all. Christians, can I encourage you? Get an attitude this year. I don't know what's going to happen in your life. I can't even imagine what's going to happen in your life. I've sat with moms with their babies in the hospital and then had to bury them. I've sat with children who've buried their parents. I've seen divorces happen. I don't know what's going to happen. I've seen families say, we've just lost everything. We lost our job, our house. We don't know what we're going to do. I understand. I don't know what's going to happen. But folks, let's at least stand firm in our faith to know whatever we're going through, God is with us. I don't know what's going to happen this year. But I can tell you this. I know who's going through this year with me. I know who's there in February when you're in the hospital. It may not be your family members. It may not even be your pastor. But I'll tell you this. I know your God will be with you. I don't know who's going to be with you when you're in there refinancing and trying to figure out what you're going to do in March or in July. But I'll tell you what, your God is with you. My God is in my corner. That gives me an attitude. And my attitude is this, not that I don't face these things, but that when I face these things, I know that my God is with me. He has not left me alone. You're never alone with God. That's a great thing. It's full of attitude, that name, Emmanuel. It's also full of authority. Authority. I believe that when I was a little kid getting beat up by Kelly Mortensen at the age of 7, that God had already written in this big book, now let's get our arms around this, that God had already written in His big book my name and my story. I believe that when I came to Christ at the age of 19, I learned that God was authority. He was the authority, the author and perfecter of my faith. I believe this. Somewhere in this book that God wrote about my life, He saw me on December in 2009 in Port Huron, Michigan, preaching to you today. I believe God wrote that. And all the things I've been through in my life, all the things that have happened in my life, I believe God had that written in His story. I have two choices today. I can get into Emmanuel and say, God's with me, and I can get into His story and know that He is the author of my life. Nothing happens, God. Nothing happens to me, Father, without You knowing it. God, You're in control of my life. The good, the bad, and the ugly, You are in charge of my life. And I trust You. I trust You with that. Or I can write my own story and not have Him as the author of my life. And I can make my own choices. And can I tell you, there are people, God love us, there are people who choose their own life and their own path. And God will not interfere with you choosing your path. He loves you that much. But He tells us right here in this story, He tells us in verse 4, I love this. If you look in verse 4, Ahaz is scared to death. These kings are coming against him. Can I ask you, what do you do when, like Chicken Little, your sky is falling? What do you do when the world isn't so perfect? Yell at God, pray, love God, hate God, blame God, trust God. What do you do when the sky falls? I say, well, God must wanted the sky to fall. But He holds me in that. I am in His hands all the time. He is the author of my life. I accept that. I love this. He says in verse 4 to Ahaz, say to him, be careful, keep calm, don't be afraid. Don't lose your heart because these two men are smoldering stubs of firewood. Don't you love that? God already had a plan. He says, you know what? You might want justice in this world. Look at all these people. They're just the evil people in this world. Can I tell you, God's going to have His justice. He calls these guys firewood. He says, these guys are firewood. What does that mean? They're reserved for the fire. These guys are going to get their due. Don't worry about them. In fact, in 65 years, the one's not even going to be around. Do you know that God has your life laid out? He knows your life if you'll trust Him and let Him be the author. I love the words He said to Moses. He says, Moses, I'm going to be with you. And He was with him. Did Moses trust Him? Yeah. What did God do? He delivered him from Pharaoh. What did He do? He took him through the water. What did He do? He gave him manna when he was hungry. He never hungered, and God always took care of him. Did he face trouble? Yeah. What did they do when they faced that trouble? Oh, great. We got a wall of water here, the Red Sea, and we got Pharaoh over here. It would have been better to have died back in Egypt. Don't lose faith. God is with you. Hey, Moses, what do you got? I've got a stick and a lot of angry people. Take that stick, Moses, and touch the water and watch what I'll do in your life. And he parts the sea. You see, God makes ways when there are no ways. God parts waters when you need a way out. God will bring manna when you're hungry. God will provide a fire by night and a cloud by day. He will guide you. He will lead you. If you'll just put your trust in Him. Ah. Oh, He's the author and the perfecter of our faith. And I love what He said to Joshua. Just as I was with Moses, so I will be with you. Do you know that just as God was with Joshua, He's with you today? God is with you today. His name is Emmanuel, and He is the authority of our lives. And then finally, He's the atonement. He is full of atonement. Ahaz wasn't the best guy in the world. What amazes me in this story is God says, ask for a sign. And Ahaz goes, no, I'm not going to ask for a sign. Boy, Isaiah says, you arrogant man. Ask God for a sign. He says, I'm not asking God for anything. Why did he not ask God for a sign? Because he didn't want a sign. Because he knew his heart was evil. Ahaz had taken his own children. He was such a bad king. He'd taken his own children and sacrificed them, killed them, and thrown them into a fire to worship a false god. His own children. This is the king of Israel. He had set up on every corner, if you'd walk out today, almost every corner of Jerusalem, God's city, you'd find Asherah poles and false gods. And he had them erected on almost every single street corner. This guy was not a good guy. What doesn't make any sense in this story is then why is God telling him, I'm with you? Here it is. No matter who you are this morning, God's with you. He will not leave you. No matter what you've done, God will not leave you. That's what Ahaz teaches me. Ahaz says, I'm not going to ask for a sign. He was afraid. He was afraid to come to God because people are like, I'm too bad. I can't come to God. This name, Emmanuel, is full of atonement. I'm coming. I'm sending a virgin, and she's going to have a child in 730 years. He doesn't know that. He's just told, you're about to go into the fight of your life, Ahaz, and I'm going to be with you. Regardless of how good or bad you are, I'm going to be with you. God is with us in atonement. God wants us to come to Him. His name is above every name. God wants us to grapple hold of this thing and to get our arms around it. You see, the atonement, we look at this beautiful picture, but we don't realize how vulnerable God was. God came in the sense of a son wrapped in a manger, wrapped in swaddlings. He came as a baby. What a beautiful picture. Let's get our arms around this. This book is too big to let go and just simply go to church on Christmas and say, that was a nice service. We sang some nice songs. You see, God's atonement to redeem us came in a vulnerable place. A baby. A baby. At any moment, a cow could have stepped on him and killed him. See, what we don't see in this story right here is, let's take away these camels, but all throughout town there are soldiers with swords going through, killing every child 2 years and under. God left heaven, came down as a baby for you. He loved you that much to give His life for you. There's a great story of a guy who was a young pastor. When I first started the ministry, this guy went to Moody Bible College in Chicago, Illinois. If you've ever been downtown Chicago, you'll understand this. This guy really loved the Lord. And I close with this. As he loved the Lord, he wanted to do something great for God. He's a Bible student. He's going to be a pastor. This is some years ago. He gets on a bus one night after classes. And downtown Chicago can be pretty rough at night. I've been down there, heard the gunshots under the subways, and seen the gang members, and I've been to Caprini Greens, one of the largest gang areas in the country, where even cops don't like to go. This young man got on the bus, and as he got on the bus, he noticed there were a few gang members on the bus, and they were harassing everyone. And so he told them to stop. In the name of the Lord, stop. Well, these gang members didn't have the time of day for him. When he finally got off the bus, these guys got off the bus with him. And they beat him and put him in the hospital. They put him within inches of his life. Wow, standing up for God, this is what it gets me. God's in their corner. Remember, God is with us. And he prayed as he was in that hospital room recovering. And it was easy to identify these guys. It was easy to arrest them. There were a lot of witnesses. So they were arrested and the trial day came and these guys were tried. You know, kind of that three strike. These guys had criminal records. I mean, these guys had records and records and records. But this was a felony assault, almost murder. They were going to go to jail for a long, long time, and the court found them guilty. And at the sentencing hearing, this young minister stood up and he said he got to address those who had assaulted him before they were sentenced. And he said, "Your Honor, I have a request. These four young men in here, I would like to request that you let them go free, and I would like to serve their time in jail." That's what he felt like the Lord wanted him to say. And the whole place just hushed. And the four defendants couldn't believe it. Their eyes got big. The judge said, "Whoa, whoa, whoa," and he brings down his gavel. "Order in the court. Young man, I appreciate your enthusiasm for these guys, but that's never been done before. That's not going to happen. Something like this has never been done before." And the young man stood up. He says, "Oh, that's where you're wrong. It was done. 2,000 years ago, a world full of guilt and crime, a world that assaulted God, a world that has been guilty from day one, came before the king, the judge of this universe, and before he brought his gavel down to say, 'Guilty, you are sentenced to life without parole, you will be separated from God forever.' Before that moment happened, Jesus Christ stepped in and said, 'Your Honor, I'd like to say a few words. I'd like to take all of their punishment for all of their crimes, every one of them. I'll serve the sentence.' Before that gavel came down, Jesus Christ took upon Himself our sin." The word Emmanuel, God with us, Jesus came. They put Him on a cross and He took your guilt and my guilt. He took our sin. And I say to you, like the Apostle Paul, in Philippians it says, "Every knee shall bow and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. He is Emmanuel." Will you bow your knee? I call on you, church. The world one day will bow their knee. Some will bow not wanting to bow. They'll just bow because God will say, "You will bow." You know, when it says, "Every tongue will confess Jesus Christ is Lord," you know, it's kind of like relationships. You got to understand the tone. You know, in relationships, when you say, "I love you," you could say, "I love you." Or you could say, "I love you. I love you." It's the tone. So when it says, "Every knee shall bow and every tongue confess," there will be some that will say, "Jesus Christ is Lord? No! Jesus Christ is Lord?" And there will be others say, "Jesus Christ is Lord. To the glory of God the Father." And I say to you, at this Christmas, when you look at that manger, bow your knee to the King of Kings. His name is Emmanuel. God has come to us, and He's in your corner. Let's stand together.